This is a Gathering Heritage project interview recorded in County Louth in Ireland.
I would like to welcome Tim Mullins to our Gathering Heritage project. Now, Tim, of course, is well known for operating the Glengat Guest House here in Dundalk. But today we are going to mention the Glengat. We've just done it. But we are going to be talking about a completely different thing altogether. Tim, you're very, very welcome.
Thank you very much, Harry. I'm delighted to be here with you.
Now, Tim, you are not a Dundalk man. And will you tell me a little bit about, first of all, where you were born and your family, what your dad did?
Okay, I'm from Mitchelstown in County Cork. I've a family of seven children. My dad was a local Irish life insurance agent. And my mum was originally from Watergrass Hill. She was Mescal. They had a business in Watergrass Hill. And dad was from the top of the Galtee Mountains. I don't know where they actually met or how they met, but they were fantastic parents to us. Did everything for us and guided us in the right direction, hopefully.
When you mentioned all them names, Mitchelstown and all these names, yes, from down the south of Ireland, and the first thing you think of is beautiful part of the country.
Yeah, it's really, really... It doesn't have a coastal line where Mitchelstown is very much inland. It's just beside Limerick and Tipperary, the three counties. Cheese, Mitchelstown cheese, very famous. Yeah. But it's beautiful, and I love going back there. Like I have great memories of going up the Galtee Mountains, saving hay as a young guy in my dad's home place. But great memories, always great to visit there. I had hoped to get back to Cork eventually in the job I was in, but when I laid down roots in Dundalk, it was always a great place to visit, and my children to this day love going back there.
But you'd never move down there, and you'd never leave Glengat.
No, I'd never leave Dundalk. No, I've got a great welcome here, a great town to come into, and I'd miss too much of Dundalk, I think, if I left it now.
Now, Tim, tell me a little bit about what you did when you left school. What was your first job, or had you a wee job before you left school?
No, I remember after doing my Leaving Cert, I went to the last 2 years of my schooling were in Mount Medary College in Waterford, and I remember when I left school, the furthest thing from my mind was permanent pensionable job. I remember I had a relation that had a garage in Mitchelstown, and I was working there just to pass the time. And I remember my dad coming down with an application form that they had filled out, and just would I sign it? And I signed it, and they went home. And about a week or two later, my mum said to me, "You have an interview in Dublin." And I said, "For what?" And I started reading up about customs and excise, and I saw motorcycle patrol in west of Ireland. I said, "God, that'd be great," and motorcycle up around the border. And I said, "Sure, I'll give it a go anyway." But I remember I got a John Norris garage in Mitchelstown. I remember asking John for the day off on the Friday, and dad and mum into the Anglia car and away to Dublin with us for the interview. And at the end of the interview, they must have wanted me very badly, but they said that I had passed the interview for customs, and did I want to start the following Monday or a week later? So it's hard enough to get to Dublin at that stage. So we said, when I was there, I said I'd start. So I remember my dad driving out to Drumcondra Road. Some contact within Revenue said they were staying out there. So I remember going into a digs there at the time, and they said I was starting in Dublin Airport on Monday.
Now, let's rewind a little bit. Why do you think did your dad pick the customs?
I don't know. I don't think he chose it. It just happened to... There was an ad in the paper.
It was, as you said, a pensionable job.
Yes, and I remember about 3 weeks after going home, and I remember going to Mass on the Sunday and people coming up to me congratulating me on this big job I got in the government. I told them it was surely a big job.
Had you any idea before you, with the ward customs, because you're a long way from the border and everything down there in Cork, so had you any idea what it entailed?
Absolutely none. And I remember after about 3 weeks in Dublin Airport, because I was living in the north side, they needed people to go to Dundalk, to the border.
Then what year are we talking about here?
This is 1973. And I was 19 at the time, but I remember I came to Dundalk, and my parents thought I was coming into a war zone. And any time I went home, people just asked me about the... I remember a friend of mine, Hal Brooks, asking me one night, how near was I to being shot? Like, that's the public perception.
Yeah, they had no idea, of course, down there.
No, but see, all you get so many miles from Dundalk, this happened, that happened. It was all Dundalk. But I must say, from the day I arrived in Dundalk, I absolutely loved it. I remember I met John O'Callaghan from the bank about a week after, and he was playing soccer with the rugby club soccer team at the time. I went out and I joined them, and fantastic memories of playing. Immediately I had numerous friends through football, and I was being paid. There was probably 20 guys in Dundalk, 19, 20, 21, working in customs. So we worked, partied, lived, drank. We had great times.
Now, when you heard that you were coming, or your parents heard of coming to Dundalk, there was customs at the airport. What did you were just a customs man, like the way we see them at the airport. But this was different coming up to Dundalk.
It was, but they would have no perception of customs or understanding of customs, because obviously we weren't living anywhere near the border, whereas if you were born and reared in Dundalk... one thing I must say about Dundalk is that I didn't feel any animosity from the general public towards the customs here.
Not your face anyway, Tim.
No, not my face, yeah. I did often hear I remember working in smaller places along the border, Castle Blaney and Ballybay and places like that, and Mobile. And you'd have a different... You weren't really welcome over there. You know, but I suppose it was understandable, because their father before them and generations and that through necessity would have smuggled across the border. But my view on smugglers down through the year, it didn't... Just because they smuggled didn't mean they were bad people. They did it because it was there, and that was it. It was just like progging apples down the country. It's just something you did.
And I'll tell you this very quickly. I heard the other day from somebody I was interviewing, and what you're saying there is right, that the mother used to give her a bag with nothing in it. She told her there was nothing in it, just to go for a walk and take the bag for a walk past the customs. She didn't know that there was something in it to give to a house further down, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So like you're saying, people, it wasn't evil.
It wasn't. And... They were made feel like criminals, I suppose, sometimes when they were caught, say maybe with a television and that. But sure, there's more evasion of VAT and that done in legitimate business than there ever was in people bringing just innocent televisions. And the famous Jones were a market.
Did you ever? Mentioning Jonesbury, yeah. That was really big, wasn't it?
Oh, it was.
And were you working there now at that time?
Oh, we were. I worked in Carrigarn, and then I worked in the patrol car. But the Sundays, buses came from all over Ireland.
Do you remember stopping people and taking stuff off them in the buses?
The biggest problem I had was the buses used to come up from Cork. And the next thing, I know Tig Mullins. And that was a problem for me, because I'd say, if they may know me, but that didn't mean that they could bring everything in from Jonesboro.
But it was harmless when you look at it now, wasn't it, though?
Oh, when I look back at it, and a lot of people, one of the aspects of the job I didn't like is that particularly in Carrigarn, and say agricultural products had to be seized and destroyed, say like eggs and stuff like that, and it seemed very petty.
We were always told, though, that the Cubs men took these things home with them.
Well, they were the nicest eggs I ever had. I'm only joking.
But that was what people used to say. Oh, they're only taking them now to put them into the boot of the car.
But see, you'd be going on your mentality. You were all crooked up here, you see. No.
But now, was it, there were so many unapproved roads and wee corners and nukes. It must have been difficult to control, though, at 100%.
It was very, very difficult because the big problem we had, we used to have to do surveillance work on unapproved roads and that. But like, if you see a lorry crossing the border, and if it's driving up the road, and if it's passing a clump of trees or whatever, and you see that same lorry coming out the far side, and it goes to court, and you're asked, can you swear that the lorry went in one side of the lump, the clump, it was the same lorry that came out the other side. You can't swear, you know. But so, in other words, it was so difficult. You had to have continuity, and there was a certain element of danger involved too.
Because you wouldn't have a clue where to, well, you would on the main road, but on the wee off road, you had no idea where it was.
Oh, we'd know where the border was, but see, the problem is too, when you're doing surveillance work and that on the border, you have to remember too that the troubles, there was a lot of subversive, say, troubles, anti-British.
Because that was in the middle of it at that time.
That was right in the middle of it. So I suppose we were young and carefree, and I remember being chased across fields in early hour of the morning, and at one stage, you know. But it was just something we did at the time, and we were looking back, I wonder how much backing we'd have got if anything bad did really happen, you know.
Yes, I was going to say, but the army were out there at the border. Were they helping you, supporting you out there?
No. The army would have been out there in support of guard or checkpoints and that, but at no stage would they have been as backup for ourselves, you know. Mm-hmm. But we had a good relationship with the Gardaí down through the years and the army. We would liaise with each other, obviously, but there was never a problem. When I look back, there was probably hairy moments when there was lorries trying to get back and that. But the most important thing I always said was, you leave the job behind when you finish work. If you leave it, and when you go to work, you do your job without fear or favour, and you also have to think of the safety. If somebody is going back to a kamikaze style, driving recklessly, you don't do the same, endanger your colleagues or endanger even the life of the smuggler. You have to think that it's not a do or die situation.
When you said there, the life of a smuggler, like, there was smugglers, official smugglers, shall we say, and good at it.
Oh, they were good at it. But when I think back, there were a lot of very decent families along the border that were involved in smuggling. And their attitude was that if they get away 9 times and they're caught, the tent, they put their hands up, what do we have to do here? And with consultation with Dublin, they said, you release the vehicle for treble the duty or whatever. They accepted the fine and away, and you meet them out. I remember playing football locally here against them, with the people, against smugglers and everything. And there was a kind of a mutual respect. When I meet them now, we can talk about the good old days. Because there's a modern day smuggler out now, say the drug smuggling, diesel laundering, that, and they're kind of devoid of personality. In other words, they're ruthless, they drive over you. I'd have absolutely no time for them, whereas we had a good rapport with the decent smuggler, for want of a better word. Yeah.
Of course, Tim, one of the biggest stories, every time that somebody from Dundalk, no matter where you are, in holidays in America or in England, you're telling stories, there was the one thing that it always comes up is smuggling the butter.
Oh, the butter, yeah. You know, I had to laugh. No, the butter, I remember in Jonesboro, the butter, it was, we used to see, you'd see a car driving in the road and the boot would be nearly touching the ground, like, you know. But the funny thing about it is the Jonesboro traders at the time, which I thought was very mean of them, sometimes they would have a couple of briquettes in the middle of the box of butter, or they'd, in other words, people would think they were getting 28 pounds weight of butter, but there might have only 20 pounds of it in it. But it was just, it's funny, when people think they're getting a bargain too, we all fall into this trap of, I remember there was a guy, he used to come up, he used to had a stall in Dublin, in Moore Street, and he used to come to Dundalk, come to Jonesboro on the Sunday, and buses used to come up from Dublin to buy the stuff from him in Jonesboro, and they wouldn't buy it off him in Dublin. The same people, like, in other words, they think they're getting this bargain. And you'd see people then, that when they were caught in Carrigarnon with slabs of beer, and when they heard that they were going to have to pay the duty on it, you'd see them guzzling to drink as much before they would actually have to pay the duty. It was crazy. Crazy times.
What about people like people going down on bikes and that? Would you bother with them at all?
No, I think that the bicycle, when I was here, and people walking the railway tracks with tires around them and all this, that was it was a little bit before my time, you know. Just that, you know. I'm only a young fella, you know.
Yeah. And how long did you stay up around this area with the company? Were you there until you retired?
Yeah, I worked. I remember I was promoted in the job, and I was sent to Dublin. And then when I came back, I didn't tie down a station, so I was working, doing relief work along the border. So I worked from Clonus, Monaghan, Castle Blaney, Ballybay, all when people were
not for travelling around.
Yes, but I actually loved it, because you were going breezing in and out of stations, meeting a lot. There were great guys to work with along, and great variety in the work. And I remember we had football competitions within the customs, and you'd meet guys, and
so they had a heart.
Oh, we did have a heart. Yeah, I remember. When I met Catherine, my wife, in 1979, too, I remember going down. When she announced that she was going out with a customs officer, it didn't go down too well, but the camera...
Well, to be fair to her, she's right, because we didn't think very much of you now.
Oh, I know that. But you came round, you came round.
Yeah. And Tim, when one of the big things, of course, with the customer, they were very important looking, because they had lovely uniforms and everything.
Oh yeah, we had the uniform. I remember the Bryan Island white shirt, and that was when we were staying in the flat. You'd have the bat half full, like, and piles of these Bryan Island shirts in there, and
you didn't have to iron them, sure.
No. But they were a nightmare trying to clean them and all that. But I've no regrets. It was very.
Who were you directly? Was your head office in Dublin? Like, you know, did you? Is there were told where to go?
Oh yes, yeah. They would have. Moved you around, but then you could actually be assigned to a particular station, and you could apply out of it. But it was. I often thought that people were lucky to get out. Like, if you joined the civil service and you worked in an office in Dublin for 40 years, I remember working, say, in Swanland Bar in 1974. I remember I arrived over late at night in Swanland Bar, and before I was actually appointed to Dundalk, I said I'll see the town tomorrow night, you know. And I went to bed, I went up, and it was only a street, and but just going in the morning, putting a big bucket of coal in there, lighting the fire, and it was just it's very kind of romantic look back on the place. And I think it was a privilege to have the job and working in these different areas and meeting different people in different communities. I wouldn't have swapped it for anything, you know.
What do you think now? I'm not going to ask you now, are you agreeing with Brexit or not? That's not what I'm going to put. As regards the problems, and can you see, Tim, that there could be problems if there was a customs, because that's eventually something's got to, they have to have some customs somewhere.
Well, without a shadow of a doubt, I think if Brexit comes about, which it seems likely now, particularly if it comes about with no deal, people just do not realise the complications that there are going to be. There's a lot of that people wouldn't be aware of, say, the requirement for licences for goods coming from third countries. And, like, there was always a red alert if goods were coming from outside the EU when we were clearing goods. And people don't realise outside the EU is 8 miles out the road now, you know, which is going to be a huge, huge problem. But we'll just see. There was a lot of problems. We had to cross a lot of bridges down through the years with computerization and everything coming in, and people talking the millennium there, that there was going to be major catastrophes all around. But I'm sure things will sort themselves out.
And Tim, were you aware over the years as a customs man that that you weren't liked? I mean, you know, was it part of the job? But you didn't worry about that.
Take it on the chin. You take it as part of the job. Like, it's like people say, oh, what do you do with the stuff you see? I hear you do this and I hear you do that. Say whatever you think yourself, you know.
Because that was the biggest thing with the customs men,
yeah,
wasn't it?
That was it used to always be thrown at us, but you're...
Can we now get the official from a live customs man? Yeah. What did you do with the stuff?
It was transferred to Dublin and sold, every single bit of it. No, but the thing is, I always said I speak for myself, and I think we had an unbelievable degree of honesty in all the clients that I worked with, and I think it came from being brought up in the country and your values, family values that were given to you. And I get great satisfaction now when I do meet hauliers that I dealt with crossing the border, smugglers that we locked horns with down through the years, and there was a mutual respect there. And I think if I had been wrong in any way, that that respect wouldn't be there, you know. And I genuinely am proud of it, and I'm proud of the friends that I worked with too. I think that they were great guys, great. And I must say, Dundalk has been a fantastic town to come into for me, and no regrets.
Could I ask you, if no, I'm putting you on the spot here, what would be the funniest or the most unusual smuggling story that you could tell us? There's probably millions of them, but I'm putting you on the spot now.
No, unusual. Let me see now. See, I suppose there's nothing. I'm just trying to think now of an unusual one. I may think of it now in a minute, yeah, and I'll tell you, I just...
But there were stories, wasn't it? Because they had some brilliant ideas, didn't they, the smugglers?
Oh, yes, like, you would have, like, I remember, like, there's many, many stories down through the years of, I'm just trying to think now of an unusual one, because,
would if people have thought though they had won over on you? That's basically what I'm saying. Okay. You know what I mean? But you were you a step ahead of them, and were they a step ahead of you all the time?
Well, the thing about it is, see, they had everything to lose. We went to work, we were paid at the end of the week, whereas it was in their interest to know where we lived and where the patrol cars were parked and all that. So remember, we had a house rented in Bay Estate, a crowd of us together in Avondale after, and that, and you see these what they call scout cars coming in around the place, you know. So we'd have to, you just have to be a step ahead.
So you would know them?
Oh, we'd know them, yeah. We'd know them, give them a big wave and move on. But the thing about it is, as I say, we had nothing to lose, but they had a lot to lose all the time, and occasionally could get a bit rough, you know, But I think it was very important to know that we had to uphold the law. And
yeah, what powers had you got, Tim? Had you could you do anything? Could you take stop any car and take everybody out of it at your whim?
Well, we could, yes. But the thing is, we didn't have powers of arrest now and that. But
so what would you do then? How could you officially hold them until the guards would arrive?
Oh yeah, but the thing is, and we would you bring the goods. You could apprehend the goods and the vehicle, and bring them in then for questioning and that, you know.
Yeah. It's amazing, you know, people, like we talked there earlier when you were in Cork, you didn't know, people didn't know about up here. And other than people living within Dundalk, Castle Blaney, Monaghan, no one has any idea even about the customs.
Oh, no, they don't. And the thing about it is, you'd have every reason to along the border, because they'd be looking, and I could see when Brexit does come about, I'm sure that those people will be back. There were times actually we'd be wondering, why is that load of barley being driven, being exported out now? And they would nearly know that there's a subsidy to be got for it before we would at times. They'd be kind of ahead of the posse, because They're just on the ball. That's their business.
Oh yeah.
To beat
the
system. I remember one day talking to a smuggler, who was a very wealthy guy and had made a lot of money. And I said, would you not just relax yourself now at this stage of the game? You know. I remember meeting him. I think it was down in Liston-Varna or someplace like that. And he just said, listen to him. He said, it's the nature of the beast. He said, no matter how much money you'd make, we couldn't do it right. If we could make an extra shilling, we'd do it. And that's just the way they were.
Do you meet up very often? Is there an organisation for ex-customs men? Or?
Oh, we do. Once a month we would, there's a retired customs meeting. It would be in most areas throughout Donegal, Cork, Waterford and that. But in Dundalk we meet down in the Windsor. But it's at 5:30, I think it's the last Friday of every month. But what I find very good is golf is a great way of keeping together. You know, there's golf, only 2 weeks ago I was playing in Dublin. And without that, the great colleagues that we would have had that we worked with in Dublin and that may have worked at the border and went back to Dublin, we'd never meet them again. And it's a great social get together, you know.
Finally, Tim, you had a very good childhood growing up. You had a very good job, which you admitted that you loved it. You're now the proprietor of a beautiful guest house, which is very busy all the time. And you've had a reasonably good life in that context, haven't you?
Yeah, I've always been busy. I've always been interested developing kind of came about by accident. I remember in 1992, I had no intention of going into business, but the revenue decided that they would fund a start your own business course when the border was going, that because they thought there may be redundancies. But I remember thinking I'd go down with another guy, and he said I'd say I'm doing a pub, and I said, sure, I'd say I'm doing a guest house. I had no intention of it, but I knew Mrs. McGinn in the Crescent here, and I just said, I'll call in and say I've done a bit of research.
That's the house where we're sitting in now.
Yeah, the house we're sitting in. And I remember I called in at 7 o'clock in the evening, and the class was at 7:30, and she told me about, it was kind of like a digs at that stage, and I said, I better go now. And she said, by the way, I'm selling it if you're interested. And 24 hours later, I had the deal. I had no intention of doing it, but I went home that night and I said at the car, she never liked living out the country, we used to live in Thomastown. So I came in and we did a deal with Mrs. McGinn the following day. We had an awful lot of work to do. Like, we're 30 years in business now next year, and it has been constant development all the time.
And it couldn't be in a better spot, because I walked there after parking my car down to town, and to come up Stapleton Place and round by the Garda Barracks in the Friary, all my area, of course. And it's a beautiful area of the town.
Yeah, it's very, very convenient. Like, you can walk to everywhere, and very good shops and clubs and pubs and railway station, bus station, everything is nearby. And I must say, I love what I do here.
Do you, I'm not going to say bum and boast, but do you stick your chest out and say, I was a customs man?
No, definitely not. I wouldn't say it's no different to any other job. When you go in, you do it to the best of your ability. There's a way of doing. I remember my first boss in patrol cars in Dundalk was a guy called Donald Cotter, and he was from Cork, same as myself, but he had a wonderful way with the public. I thought I remember he used to do his job, and they used to be actually thanking him going out the door. They just felt that he gave them a break, even though he may have seized stuff off them, but it was a great learning. It was a great start for me to work with somebody like that, and I always try to do that down through the years, to treat the public with respect and at the same time do your job.
Dim Kelly, thank you very much indeed for talking to me.
You're very welcome, Harry. Lovely to talk to you today.
Listen to lots more epic interviews at gatheringheritage.com.